flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is now 11 o'clock. And up next is the Dirtbag Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of Flash. Every Thursday, November 7th, at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland, Flash returns for its fifth anniversary and the retirement of this live theater production. When the Earth is threatened with destruction by the planet Mongo, Flash Gordon attempts to save us. But Ming the Merciless, Emperor of Mongo, has other plans. This production runs from November 7th through November 17th, Friday and Saturday evenings at 7:30 p.m., Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Again, that's Flash! November 7th through 17th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information, including start times, special performances, and more, can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the screening of Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater.
To change the community, you have to change the composition of the soil. We are the soil.
This plant can die, and it grows back in a bad environment in a city like this. Then for sure I know I can fall and get back up and do the same thing.
I put a carrot in the ground and all hell broke loose.
Again, that's Can You Dig This? On Thursday, November 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
Well, here we are, Jim, the second Wednesday of the month, November 13th.
Amazing. It's my grandson's birthday, November 13th.
Wowie.
Yeah. Tito.
Here we are at the Dirtbag.
This is the Dirtbag.
This is Glenn Andreessen. Here beside you now until 12 noon. Here beside me, to my right, Jim's left. Jim is left. Jim Gilbert.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good morning, Lynn.
Back from the Siberia and Utah and Liberal.
Liberal. Greetings from Liberal.
Liberal, Oregon.
That's right.
All three potentially cold spots.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
And we're going to talk about two of them.
Yeah.
We won't be talking about Utah today.
Well, we could even mention Utah. 6 degrees. They got down to 6 degrees there.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago.
I have my sister-in-law and brother-in-law live in Iowa. And they live in Cedar Falls, which is about 50 miles from Cedar Rapids. Minus temperatures there.
Wow.
Minus six or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that really stops the ripening of things, doesn't
Whew.
It?
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. Yes, what else will we be talking about? Well, it's all going to be by memory because I forgot my notes, run sheet, as we call it here. You know, we've been doing this a long time, Jim. We can do this.
That's right. We can play lots of music.
Yes, yes.
No, we'll talk about it. We got a lot to talk about.
Right.
Plants. So.
And we have a lot to talk about as far as dead plants, too. Leaves, particularly. We're going to spend some time about that. I will talk about, towards the end of the hour, if we have time, I title it, There Must Be 50 Ways to Love Your Leaves, with my apologies to Paul Simon. Mm-hmm. But I have, let's see how many leaves. I'm up to number 35 now. I've got, there must be 50 ways, but I've got 35 ways listed of how you can use leaves.
Huh. That's pretty good, Glenn.
Yeah, I've been collecting them through the years. Last time I did this, I believe on the radio, was it 3 years ago, so I figure it's time for that. And somebody called up and added his one way that he uses leaves, and that is to uses them in his chicken run. And after they're stomped on and pooped on and whatnot, then he puts them in the compost pile.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to this. I have a way that you might not have on your list.
Okay.
Too,
well, so. we'll see. Okay. I can even add smoke it now.
Smoke it?
Yeah.
Smoking leaves.
One way you can use leaves. Yeah. I guess we use buds more now than leaves.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, that's the idea of marijuana.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just another way to use leaves.
Right.
Right. But we're going to mostly talk about how we use them in the garden here today. But it did bring up one thing that I added is that it's the name of a sports team, hockey team, the Toronto Maple Leafs. And that got me to thinking, why isn't it the Maple Leaves?
Well, right. Well, why is my car a leaf? When I see more than one of them, I still call them leaves, not leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we do have another, beyond this, we have a show today. But we are going to start with what's annoying me this month. And this is not an annoyance at all. It's just an observation since Veterans Day has passed us by recently. And we also have a Memorial Day. I think that we should get and enact a Diplomat's Day. Diplomat's Day.
In honor of what's going on right now?
No.
No.
Well, yes, possibly. But also to honor those people who have successfully kept us out of armed killing conflict.
Oh.
It's just much better to prevent those darn things in the first place.
That's absolutely correct.
And we don't have, in this current administration, diplomats. Well, we do, and some of them are testifying today.
Yeah,
you know, true blue diplomats, not partisans.
Right. Thanks to them.
Yeah. Yep. So that's not my annoyance. It's just my observation that I would like to see a Diplomat's Day. Sometime.
Good idea. Well, we can do it here on the show.
We could. We've got a gardening show though to deal with. As I said, Jim is back from Ukraine, so we'll talk about that. Siberia.
Yeah.
Is it Ukraine or Ukraine?
Ukraine.
The emphasis on the first syllable.
Mm-hmm. Ukraine.
Okay.
That's not how you say it in Russian, but
yeah,
but
that's how we accepted pronunciation. Okay.
Yeah.
That this is another thing that has bothered me. I might as well say it because it's going to bother me until next month. I was raised in the Eugene area. Born in Portland, lived here for my first 4 years, and now been back here for almost 40 years. And I listen to Eugene radio stations, and many of them call the town Eugene. It's not Eugene. It's Eugene. Yeah.
Yeah. I lived there when I was a little kid, too. I'm trying to think how. Yeah. Eugene. I lived
That's
in
right.
Eugene.
That's right. Not Eugene. It's not like Ukraine.
Well, it's at least better than the way people from the East Coast say Oregon,
yes.
Right?
Well, they don't have to be from the East Coast, Jimbo.
Really?
No. That could be right here, and they mess it up.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's get on with our show. Did I mention we have a plant of the month and a garden stumper?
You did.
Okay. Well, I just mentioned that to you. Our garden stumper is Phacelia, Phacelia, Phacelia. And it is a great blooming plant. It's not an edible plant, but it attracts beneficial insects as well as pollinators. It's, by many research standards, one of the best, according to Oregon State, one of the five best pollinator-attracting plants you can plant. It's a warm weather crop, so you wouldn't be wise to plant it now, but anytime your garden is going to be fallow and you might think about planting buckwheat, you might want to plant Phacelia. It's a very attractive blue flowered plant, does seed readily, but not it doesn't spread like or is persistent like vetch. For one, it's a warm, not cool season crop, so the cold weather is going to kill it down. But if you want, it kind of grows a little bit like a wheat stalk, and then it blooms out at the end. But a very attractive plant. So remember that.
Where do you Phacelia. get seeds for this?
Well, it can be had in certainly from seed catalogs easily, and I'm thinking that at some point there will be more of it will be showing up in garden centers and things like that. So, Phacelia. We're thinking of it, do I have this number written down? No, I'm going to have to remember it. 503. Is it 231-8187? Is that the one that we're going to call you? Our brand new engineer, Asia, has given me I'm not sure that's it. But it says Air Room Phones, 503-231-8187. Okay, she gives me the thumbs up. That's it. If you have a question about gardening or anything else that we are talking about this morning, that would be nice to hear from you. Okay. That is the plant of the month. Why don't we get to our first musical break? Did you happen to get those up, Asia? Did you get them on? Oh, she gives me another thumbs up. So far, so good. Okay, well, we're talking today about leaves. And, of course, leaves, as far as the garden goes, does much better after they break down. And so that is kind of the theme here, breaking down. But our first song comes from number one. What are you saying? You want it played now? We're going to play it. I'm just giving a little bit. There we go. This is... Do you remember who this is? All right. Well,
slime oozing out from your TV set. You will promise that I feed you until the day that we don't need you. Don't go for help, no one will heed you. Your mind is totally controlled. It has been stuffed into my mold, and you will do as you are told until the rights to you are sold.
Yeah, Frank Zappa. Frank Zappa, the mothers of invention. I am the slime. That's just the key word here of the radio. But he's got some pretty good
it's amazing.
Some rhymes going on.
As I always say, Glenn, you inspire me every time. Some new music I've never heard.
Right. Well, you know, if we do, this leads us into our next topic of making leaf mold. And it shouldn't be slimy, but, you know, I can take liberties, as we say. Yeah, the mothers of invention. Okay, well, leaf mold is a kind of a fancy name for something that's very, very easy to do, and the results are astoundingly beneficial when you apply them in the garden. If you just pile up leaves and give them nominal attention, they'll break down in 1, 2, or maybe even 3 years. And, you know, try to give them the best that you can. You know, don't give them too much water. In other words, you know, are they going to be in the rain all the time, which would shut down any type of a breakdown, which is caused by microbial action, mostly fungus in this case. But if you pile them up and leave them, you'll end up with this material. It's called leaf mold. It doesn't look moldy. That's just what we call it. And it's kind of the consistency of coffee grounds. And it is a great soil amendment. It's not really, it doesn't have a tremendous amount of nutrients in it, but it resists further breakdown and becomes somewhat food for the microorganisms in the soil. You know, part of the problem is that you just never have enough of it, but you could use it as a mulch right on top of the soil, a dressing, I guess that's the word that I was looking for, or you can dig them in or use them as a part of your potting soil or whatnot. Not all leaves are the best candidates for that. You would want to avoid, if you can, some of the leaves that have a higher lignin content. In other words, maybe the more crispy the leaf is when it's dry, that's indicative that there's more lignin in it, more carbon, and that just takes longer for it to break down. So oak leaves are a major poster child for leaves that you may not want to be using for this.
I've got bags and bags of pin oak leaves, which don't break down.
No.
You know, it's funny.
Contrast that with maple leaves, which are pretty wimpy. Mm-hmm. You know, the veins in them are the major source of lignin there, and there's just not very many of them. You can do things to help with the breakdown, not only of leaves that you're going to pile up to make leaf mold. You can speed up the process by running over them with a lawnmower or a weed whacker or running them through your chipper shredder if you had such a thing. The reason that this makes a difference is because there's more surface area now on the leaf for these bacteria to attach themselves to and start dissolving, consuming this lignin, if you will, carbon material. I've heard of some people will put leaves in a garbage can, and then if they have a string trimmer to just go up and down a few times with that. Don't think it would work in a blender.
I was just thinking maybe you could blend something in that garbage can and some fruit in it or something.
Yeah, right.
The string trimmer.
And then you don't want them to dry out. I mean, just like a compost pile, we want them to be more the consistency of a wrung out sponge. And so once they get wet, you know, cover it up. Don't just let the constant rains, although we haven't had constant rains yet, and you know, we probably will if this is any, you know, we've never not had at least, I don't know, what's our least amount of rain we've had, 25 inches a year or something?
I don't know.
Normal 40 some.
1977 was the year I remember. Our spring dried up where I was living up in the mountains. That was the only one. So
that would be terrible. So. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
And if you need to add water, then do. I've been doing a fair amount of chipping, shredding, taking advantage of these wonderful days that we had, at least last week and the week before. Really, the whole month of November has been good. And did a lot of chipping and shredding, and including some street tree leaves. And it was just too dry. I had to add water in the compost so they'd start breaking down.
What about adding some manure or something to that pile of leaves to help break it down?
Well, you could, but then it would be more compost rather than leaf mold.
Got it.
And that does bring up a very good point in that leaves, most leaves, have more than twice the mineral content of manure. You know, maybe not nitrogen, but with many of the others, and certainly more carbon, which we need plenty of in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, if we have time, I'll be going over my 50 ways to love your leaves.
So I just, as I told you during the break, I have to bring up another leaf.
Yes.
Which is our electric car, which I just so love this car that I have to advertise it. I'm sorry, but it's a beautiful leaf. And the plural, unfortunately, as much as I try to make it into leaves,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't work. So leaf, but it's a cool car. The new model has 160. The less expensive one is 160 mile range. We lease the car because it's like a little computer. So every two or three years, we get a new one, and we pay for this car $170 a month. No maintenance, no fuel. Run it off of our solar panels at the farm. Takes us anywhere we want to go. It's roomy.
160 miles. That's good.
It's a great leaf.
I don't know why they don't make a pickup, electric pickup. I think I've mentioned that before.
Well, I'm looking for an electric tractor. And they are out there, but unfortunately, the one I did find was pretty expensive. So I'm still.
And it's just an aftermarket conversion.
It was hard to tell exactly how they okay. created it.
Yeah. Well, they are. This new company is going to make a electric pickup.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember the name of it now, but. It's $60,000 or something.
After you ride around, you know, drive an electric car, it makes me feel at least like the internal combustion engine is really yesterday's technology.
Well, driving a bike kind of gives you the same idea too.
Yeah, right. But it's a little more takes more time to get to Astoria, for example, on a bike than it does in a car.
I've never tried that.
Yeah.
You know, anyway. I was just thinking. You know, I somewhat cut it close here when I came here today. You know, it was about 7 minutes till the hour when I got here, but. When I'm on a bike, I don't worry about traffic being slowing me down. There's always a way to get around it.
And you know how I get here, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
light rail.
Light rail and Portland streetcar.
Yeah.
From Oregon City.
And how do you get home? Same way in reverse?
It depends. If I can talk somebody to give me a ride or if I have to take,
right.
Otherwise, I just go backwards, yeah.
Right.
Actually, I'm over the other side of town, so I get on the... Usually, the 35 bus is a very cool bus. Runs from all the way through downtown Portland and ends up in Oregon City.
That's pretty handy.
Pretty handy.
Yeah.
And then there's a nice little tea shop in Oregon City before I head out to get a ride to the farm. And it's
all
good.
Right.
Life's good.
Okay. Well, that's another use for at least the name leaf.
That's right.
Yeah, it helps us all in the garden. Okay, well, you want to talk about your trip to Siberia now?
I'd love to talk about it. It was a memorable journey. I went there for two reasons. The first reason was to see my old friends who are not getting any younger, as I am not. And I'd actually first gone to this region in 1998 to attend a conference on Seabury, the first one. And my partner Lorraine and I went there, and it was our first international conference. The region is fantastic. It's really a beautiful region. I would encourage any listener to get their globe out or their map and find Lake Baikal, which
is... that's one of the something-somethings.
It's a something-something.
Is it the deepest lake in the world or something like that?
Deepest and the largest body of fresh water in the world, and a beautiful lake. And
what's the, Siberia we think of as, the tundra.
Yeah.
And what is this?
It's forested around there. Siberia is a pretty diverse space. It goes from far north, extremely cold. It's not warm anywhere, but it's definitely, this area is more toward the southern part of central Siberia.
What latitude would it be?
52, somewhere in that range.
So is our U.S. Washington border, is that 54? 54, 40, or 5?
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that?
Yeah,
so it's lower, maybe.
I mean, we're 45 approximately where we are right now. A little bit more, a little bit north of 45.
Okay, so not too, right.
It's not, the southern part there, 54, somewhere in that range. I mean, the lake runs from north to south, so it's quite a ways north. Yeah. I was on the southern end of the lake. In fact, I was in two cities, and again, this is fun geography, but Irkutsk is on the west side of Lake Baikal, and Ulan-Ude, which when I was young, didn't know how to pronounce it, was Ulan-Ude, is on the east side of Lake Baikal. And Ulan-Ude is a very interesting city because it's the capital of the Buryatian Republic, which is what you might consider to be the Buddhist Republic of Russia.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. There are Buddhist temples there. The people are really, the native people are more Mongolian in appearance. I mean, it is really just like an extension of Mongolia.
Oh, I see.
Because if you go south, you run into Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital of Mongolia. And, anyway, the two goals, one was to see my friends, like I said, and that was really great, and talk to them about their work. There's a lot of, as I travel around and meet people, I realize that the world, there's been a lot of people in the world that have done some pretty cool things, and I'm focused on plants, of course, but that are not well publicized and well known. And one of the men that I was visiting with, Klim Arbakov, spent about 10 years in the 70s wandering in the river valley of this beautiful, beautiful region, looking for interesting forms of seabury.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And one of
these were native then.
Native seabury plants that have
right.
different characteristics than anything that we have, that the further ones in Europe have. So, and one of the characteristics that I was fascinated with, because when we saw this in 1998, I just could not, I had these photographs of pictures of seabury juice, some of which were separated, which is what they typically do, where you have a layer of orange and coloring, and the oil goes to the top, and then there's more of a transparent layer below, and some were not separated. And I was like fascinated by this, and so I asked him. I said, "What's the deal here?" And he said, "Well, that from this particular region, the fruit from those berries doesn't separate, and nobody has studied this." Anyway,
and that was at that. That was then.
That was then, but now I wanted to find out what varieties were because we have some of them, and now I want to do some experiments with our own juice to see what happens.
Well, we'll come back to your travelogue here.
Yes, of course.
Somebody has a gardening question, maybe. Okay, Asia, are they still there? Okay, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hi, this is Jim.
Hi, well, this is Glenn, but Jim's here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had two things. The plant of the month that you mentioned.
Yeah, Phacelia.
I've got some seeds, so can I mention a local nursery that has them?
Sure.
The seed?
You bet.
Nichols Garden Nursery.
Okay,
good. Good place.
We've had...
I guess these have to be direct seeded.
Yeah, there would be no reason not to do that. I mean, they're pretty hardy.
Has yours germinated in the garden this fall?
No, I wouldn't have planted them this late in the season.
Oh,
they're a warm season crop. They won't make it through the winter. So this would be in the spring or in the summer when it's going to be fallow.
Well, I didn't know if our mild weather, they maybe germinated or something.
Well, it's possible.
On the ground.
But the light becomes an issue then, too.
Oh.
We should talk about that, you know, trying to grow lettuce, for example, in low light, in that not only does it not grow too well, but it can be toxic. But I don't know much about that. You're okay. Nodding like you know what you're talking about. Okay. Go ahead.
I had a pruning question about figs, Desert King figs.
All right.
I have a friend that has a tree that's 12 feet tall, and she wants me to bring it down. So that will that cause it to sucker from the base of the trunk?
Well, Desert King is a wonderful fig variety. I every year I fall further in love with it, and it's a really delicious fig, as I'm sure you know. The characteristic of Desert King that's unique is that it bears one primary crop, which is on the old wood, so the wood that grew last year. So when pruning, you want to keep that clearly in mind and not take all of the old wood off. So if a 12-foot tall one is unfortunate, that's pretty big already. If you want to have figs next year, I would probably prune out, try to do like some sort of 50% pruning where you remove half of the old wood. And you can go, into wood that's maybe 2 inches in diameter or so if you have to. The figs are very resilient, but to bring it down, but leave some of the older wood to bear fruit. And then the following year, you'll have new old wood, and you can take out the older old wood. As far as the suckering part, all figs sucker. And in my opinion, it's good to remove them, remove the suckers, and just keep a single trunk.
I've never had... my Desert King is big now. I mean, it's probably 20 feet, and the diameter is probably it's more than a foot. It's a honker.
Wow,
it's a big tree.
And
wow.
For many years, I can't remember it suckering from the ground. I mean, I've pruned it so it's just one big trunk, and there's some that come up, and I shouldn't say come up, new branches come from below the cut, a cut. And that's something that you might be concerned about too. How I approach my 20-foot fig, and I don't necessarily want it to be this big, but it does provide privacy for upstairs windows in the summer.
You can reach the figs from the window.
No,
right?
We can't do that, but they're taller than the house and provide good privacy. And so my tactic is to shorten it every year. So I'll just pick the tallest branch and then follow it back to a good crotch in the tree and cut it back. And maybe take two of those out.
You're doing that from a ladder, I would imagine, if it's 20 feet tall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chainsaw.
Will this past summer's growth, that whole new growth produce figs?
Yes.
Yes.
Or can you take like a third of that branch out too, that new growth from this year?
I would.
Does the whole branch produce new figs next year?
You get a lot of figs toward the tip.
Because it's always on new growth, right. not on old growth, so it always gets bigger.
Right. So
not toward the base of the new growth.
Not so much.
More toward the tip. So it's better not to tip those back, the new growth from this year. It's better not to tip that back.
Of course, another thing to keep in mind is my fig, birds get many.
Yeah.
Squirrels get many. And there's just more than I really want to deal with. So, I don't mind taking them off, even though that leads to fewer fruit.
That's
all right.
Perfectly
fine. Thanks for your information.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll come back to Siberia, but let's get in the, should we take our next musical break? This is my first breakdown. This might be from Tom Petty, from his very first album, back in the 70s, Breakdown. It's kind of a popular one, but Tom Petty.
if you don't. I'm not afraid of you running away, honey. I get the feeling you owe. You see, there is no sense in pretending. Your eyes give you away. Something inside you is feeling like I do. You see, all there is to say.
It's all right. Tom Petty. From the, I think it's a self-titled album, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Okay. H, are you ready to play my the Garden Stumper theme, which is number 4? Just a little 30-second thing. Okay, let's do that now then. Okay, well, I'm going to have to recite this one from memory. I can't even remember some of these things, but the question is, why are some leaves, or how do some leaves become yellow in the fall and some are red? What is the difference? Why are some yellow and some red?
Depends on the kind of paint you use, right?
Well, yes, what's ever on your paintbrush. Right. So there is a scientific difference for this, and that's what we're going for here. And I just learned a few things here when I was researching this question. So why are some yellow and some red, and what kind of causes that part of it? Okay. All right. So if you have the answer to that, or if you have a gardening question, it's the same number, Jim.
It's amazing, isn't it? So easy to reach us.
503-231-8187. Okay, so let's go back to Siberia. And I just want to mention, because I thought of this during that I had a neighbor who was from Russia. He fled the Bolshevik Revolution. He was an old neighbor. He's been dead for 20, more than almost 30 years. We still live in the house. And he was teaching me a little bit of Russian, and just Russia, I mean, talking about things. And he mentioned one time that there are 11 time zones in Russia. How many do we have in the continental United States?
Three, right?
Three different time zones.
Russia's a big place.
yeah.
But, I mean, you go out there to Kaliningrad, I mean, I'm sure you run all the way to Vladivostok or Kamchatka, and there's a lot of territory there. But one of the things that was really also enjoyable, and I any readers that have the opportunity to take a train ride anywhere in the world, I suggest doing it, but I was able to take the train from Irkutsk to Ulan-Ude and back.
How many miles is that, or kilometers?
Well, that's a good question. The time, I know more of the time.
Okay,
because
how long
it's about
did it take?
7 hours.
Okay.
And I used to take the night train because I was so dedicated to my work that I thought I'd sleep on the train so I would be awake at all hours. But this time I decided to take the day train because I really wanted to see the scenery, and especially the southern end of Lake Baikal. And it was fascinating for a couple of reasons. I mean, one was the beautiful scenery, and Russian train cars are kind of fun because there's like four berths, and you get your berth, and you can sleep if you want, or you can sit up and chat with your neighbors in the berth, and there's oftentimes three or four people there. So, the trains don't go super fast or anything, but they have every train has a samovar in it, so you can make your tea or your lapcha, your noodles, or whatever you want to do, and just enjoy the ride. And I just find it fascinating. So I gave two presentations, one in Ulan-Ude and one in Irkutsk, to groups of enthusiasts, for gardening enthusiasts.
And this was in Russian.
In Russian,
yeah,
with my along with my mistakes. And the one in Irkutsk was fascinating because they have three garden clubs in the city. All of them.
What city of what size?
The city is probably 500,000. It's okay. A good-sized city.
Yeah.
And they've got three very active garden clubs, all people who are just dedicated to growing fruit. I mean, they have got in an area where the temperature can drop to minus 45 and below. Jeez. And they are growing fruit there. And they're just like into it, you know. So it's fun to talk to them because, you know, we don't worry about that here. But some of the things we grow are that hardy and they're excited about it.
Let's get this call and see if we have an answer. And then we'll get back to Siberia. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, am I on?
You're on.
Glenn?
Yep.
So the difference in coloration is the things like chlorophyll.
Yeah, that's
that dyes and it displays the yellow pigment.
That's right. So the yellow pigment is there all along.
Right.
And so when the chlorophyll, when the light goes getting less, you know, the tree shuts down that chlorophyll production, so no more green, and the yellow shows through. Okay, continue.
Then there's xanthophyll. Is that the red?
Yes. And how does that become red?
So it's there all the time, and when the yellow dies, the red shows up.
Nope. This is what I learned, and this may not be completely... borne out by science yet, but this is what the theory is now.
Okay, I'll listen off the air.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you.
And so once the... We got another call too, but I'll try to explain this without my notes that I printed out for it. Jeez. That this anthocyanin, I think that's the name of it. That's this chemical, the red pigment, that is actually produced then. And the reason that we have some better years when it's dry and sunny, then it will produce more for those sugar, because that there would be some food there then too, in the red leaf, even though there's the abscension, this corky layer or spot where the leaf hangs on, it kind of dies there, so the leaf falls off. But before it does, when it's yellow, when it's red, it produces this red, which also then is kind of a food for the plant, or nutrients, if you will. So when it's dry, there's more sugars. Have we had a dry fall? You're darn tootin' we have, which is why I think the colors have been astoundingly red and bright. Mm-hmm. That's my memory talking there. So,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to the phone. Nope, not that one. Maybe they had an answer for the question. Maybe somebody has a better explanation than what I have. Can I remember here? So, are we out of phones, Asia? Yep, no more phones. Okay, so you gave two talks to
interested gardeners in both.
All the gardening clubs came together? And
yeah, well, I guess. Yeah, I'm not sure. One was actually in Ulanidi. A lot of students came.
Oh.
And I showed photographs of Oregon, which was really fun, you know, and all of the beautiful things that we do here and the plants that we grow and our way of growing things. One suggestion I made, which was, I thought was sort of, I kind of came up with this idea. Why not grow figs in Siberia?
What did they say?
Well, what I said was, I get this, I guess here's an idea. Put your fig in a pot. Grow it in a container. In the fall, the leaves fall off, of course. You get a first frost or two. Then put that in your basement, because everybody has a basement, and that's where they keep their vegetables and all the other stuff they don't want to freeze. And put the pot in the basement. They don't need light because there's no leaves. Bring it back out in late spring. It starts to grow, you will have fresh figs. And I said, as best as I could in Russian, that no one should live their life without eating a fully ripe, fresh fig. It is a gift from heaven.
And I am assuming many of them, most, maybe everybody, had not.
Nobody had done that. Nobody had eaten one. No, and you know and there was a lot of interest. You know, like, people's eyes were opening up and perking up, and thought, oh, that's an interesting idea. And then, you know, you could actually apply that to other somewhat tender deciduous plants.
Well, it's kind of what we do with certain things.
Yeah, but we don't. Basements are sort of, I think they're not so common anymore. You know, we don't really need basements in our region because we don't, you know.
Well, we don't store food. Most people don't grow their own food.
That's right. But if you have a basement and you wanted to grow something that was deciduous, it didn't need light, what an interesting
idea.
And
you had three or four hefty people to move it to the basement rather than just roll it into your greenhouse.
Yeah, there's that too, huh? I'll make a little ramp, you know, go in, a little basement ramp.
Yeah, get out of the way.
But anyway, it was really fun to talk to him. And one of the things that I have found in all my traveling is that people who are interested in plants are all the same all around the world. It doesn't matter whether we speak their language or not. Everybody wants to show you what they're up to and talk about it and you know, show you pictures and show the pictures of the grandkids eating the fruit. And, you know, it's great, fun.
And you said your visa expired.
Well, it expires in March.
March, yeah.
Yeah. When I was thinking about the journey, I thought, well, if I'm going to go, and I, you know, could always get a new visa, but I thought, if I'm going to go and my choices are October, November, December, January, February, I might want to go in October to Siberia.
Yeah.
Because after that, it's real winter.
Right.
You know, people. I mean, like, it's a place where people, they have big places, spots to go in the wintertime, and people obviously like living there, and they do a lot of winter, a lot of skiing and different things, but it's, you know, it's a cold region. It got down to about 15 when I was there.
Well, we'll transition. You said that at the farm, you've been down to 22.
22, which
and
was...
And that pretty put the kibosh on the persimmon.
I know, and that was really tough for us because we love persimmons, and they were, the last several years, we haven't had an early freeze like this.
Yeah.
I mean, so once it got down that, actually, we had an earlier frost of 27 degrees, which hurt the leaves. I mean, basically, persimmon trees aren't hurt by it, but the leaves got frozen a bit, and they started falling, and then the ripening of the fruit stops. So,
well, even though the leaves are turning color, and that they need the leaves to ripen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Basically, just sort of.
Well, I just harvested about 5 trays from my neighbor, and I've had a couple of them, and the ones that the birds had started eating and whatnot. Mm-hmm. One was overripe.
Yeah.
And the other was, getting a little overripe, but I've got lots that are, you know, not orange. They're orangey yellow.
I'm
hoping they're all right.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably fine. You guys really haven't had a frost in Portland.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We've had an official freeze.
Really?
Yeah,
yeah.
And my dahlias just took the beating. I mean, I've taken most of them out.
Well, you know, I guess there's years where we're just going to have to like accept that as part of life.
But kind of normal.
One of the things though that was I want to just mention real quickly that I thought was pretty fascinating is that before I left on my Siberian trip, I went out and gathered fruit from our trees, which, because we're a nursery, our primary focus is plants, not fruit. But of course, because we have older plants making cuttings, we for grafting and stuff. Well, we have fruit too, and for the last several years, I've been really struck by Gold Rush apple, and how easy that is to grow. And I was picking armloads of Gold Rush apples. And the fruit is beautiful. It's hardly, I don't know what exactly why, but hardly any worm damage to it. There's no scab issues with it. And it's a great flavorful apple. I mean, it's a good keeper. It ripens late. But I think I would encourage people to try it.
Because all right,
it's
Gold Rush.
Excellent one.
I don't know if I'm growing that or not.
I took it to visit my daughter and grandkids in Utah, and we made apple crisp right away. I got there first night, and it was delicious.
Huh.
So.
All right. Well, we've got time for our last musical selection, and then we will talk about what else is on our list here, besides the ways to use your leaves. Did you have anything else? Are you harvesting anything, Jim?
Well, we're pretty much done with the fruit, of course, at this point. So
okay.
Now it's digging the trees from the nursery. That's
what you're doing now.
We're a little early this year because we had so much the cold weather. It gets the leaves off of them.
Yeah.
That's another, I mean, it's not a benefit what you use leaves for, but it's
right.
One of the things we have to consider.
Yeah. Well, I'm still digging or using carrots and beets, and of course all the roots crops would still be available. We still have potatoes. They're out of the garden for the most part, using those. Chard, kale, probably some other things.
Yeah, well, and we had a great peppers.
Oh, yeah, still harvesting peppers.
Peppers, it's amazing.
They're still out there.
Crazy, beautiful, beautiful peppers. My partner Lorraine just can't go. She just grows such beautiful. I mean, they're strikingly, you know, green, bright green and red and orange, and I mean, they're just outrageous.
Yeah,
you know.
All right,
but we want to talk about plant protection, so maybe after.
Yes, okay, we'll do that after, and I'll set this up. This is another breakdown. This is it Detroit Breakdown? Is that the name of it? Yeah, this is Jay Giles Band. Motor City Shakedown. Well, we're talking about leaf breakdown here today. And after our next conversation on some cold weather protection, because we will have it, we'll whip off a few of those right before the end of the show. Stay tuned. Okay, Jim.
Okay. Well, so one thing I was thinking about this morning, and of course, in Oregon this time of year, Western Oregon, you know, we haven't really had, except for 22 degrees, and it's just an overnight freeze, nothing like, you know, super cold weather. And we haven't had super cold winters, at least the last two or three. But it doesn't, my memory goes back not too far, and I remember 5 degrees and, you know, not getting above freezing during the day, and our pond starts to freeze over and stuff. So what I thought about was making sure that our listeners, especially ones who have potted plants, understand the dangers of leaving potted plants out in the cold, that kind of cold, where the soil around the plants freezes. And
because that's kind of an artificial
environment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being above the ground.
That's right. I mean, don't worry about plants in the ground, no problem. But if you've got a potted plant and the roots zone freezes solid and the temperature is below freezing, it can kill the plant.
Right.
The top can be perfectly hardy, but the roots aren't designed for that environment. So it's important if we get a forecast of a severe cold event, an Arctic blast, so to speak, to do something with your potted plants. I was thinking also as I was riding into town about thinking of them like your pets. You know, you probably wouldn't leave your dog or cat outside all night and day if it's below freezing, and you know your plants can't talk to you and meow or bark or something, but you know they kind of need the same consideration.
So if your plants were on your deck and you know they're light, which means they're small, you know, those would be easy to move to a inside or garage or maybe even nothing else, right up against the house foundation.
Yeah, or put them on the ground, you know, which
you start, mean if they're on
if they're on the deck, take them off the deck, the elevated part, and put them just on soil, because the soil is going to be warmer, there's going to be heat coming up from below.
Yeah.
and if you have some old garbage bags or something, or bags of leaves or something, you can straw, you know, just put around them to kind of insulate them a little bit from the cold air. That's all they need. I mean, they're not warm-blooded, so.
And they're dormant.
So it should be fine.
Yeah.
It's funny because when you were talking about a use for leaves, I was thinking about putting them in plastic bags and using them for insulation.
Yeah. Some, yeah, that would work. I mean, maybe that's one of my list. I can't remember here.
Yep.
Okay, anything else on cold? We don't have anything cold in the forecast. And you know, what would be your recommendation if the temperature was going to drop to 30?
30 is not an issue.
Okay, even a potted plant.
No.
Right, okay, 30 is not an issue. What is an issue?
I would say it's a daytime temperatures below freezing are extremely, that's really important to pay attention to. If it, you know, in a small pot, like a gallon-sized pot, if the temperatures drop into the teens, then you're in danger zone.
Teens, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cold.
Be pretty cold.
For Portland, anyway.
Yeah.
But and how does wind affect it? You know, in the many parts of the city, certainly the east part and in the hills, you know, wind can be good and it can be desiccating.
Yeah, the wind is more of a drying factor than it is for cold. I mean, in fact, the wind in Portland keeps the temperature up, even though it feels really cold to the person.
Yeah,
for the actual air temperature is warmer. Where we live, we're sheltered from the east wind most of the time. And we get the cold air that comes down out of the foothills of the Cascades, and we get colder temperatures. We're typically 8 degrees colder than Portland at the nursery. And even colder sometimes. So it's the wind is a benefit for that particular reason.
Yeah. But boy, does it get tiresome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have it 8 degrees colder and no wind just for my body comfort.
Yep.
Okay, I've got 2 minutes to get through my list of leaves here. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
And some of them are very similar, but it counts as another one.
Okay.
All right, number one, use on vegetable beds in the fall when it is too late to plant a cover crop. Sheet composting, we call that. Number two, use on perennial beds. Leaves can be put on dry to avoid matting. You just leave them there all the time. Number three, use as a mulch in the summer. Four, use as a mulch in the winter. Five, use as a mulch in the fall, then rake off in the spring for use in the compost pile. Mm-hmm. Six, mulch in the fall, then leave in place in the spring and plant through prepared holes in the leaves. I do that a lot. Seven, use to kill leaves by spreading a layer of leaves 6 to 8 inches thick. This is known as sheet mulching.
Used to kill weeds, I think you said, right?
I said kill lawn, but could be weeds too.
Oh, okay.
Yep, yep. Number eight, with a mulching mower, leave them in place to break down right on the lawn. Nine, compost by themselves for at least 2 years. The finished product is known as leaf mold. I think we talked about that. Mm-hmm. Excellent at holding water. It's one of the benefits there. 10, use leaf compost as fertilizer. Pound for pound, the leaves of most trees contain twice as many minerals as does manure. Mention that. 11, compost with grass in your compost bin. 12, use as bedding in your compost bin. 13, save in a bag in the fall for use in the spring. 14, use as path material in the winter to keep your shoes clean. 15, use as a path material to keep weeds at bay. Okay, yeah, you don't have to wait until the leaves fall to the ground to appreciate them, though. On the tree, leaves do the following. 16, increase the value of a home. 17, improve air quality. 18, provide privacy and help muffle noise. 19, create shade that can keep a home up to 20 degrees cooler in the summer. 20, enable a cooling effect brought about by transpiration. 21, create oxygen. 22, use and sequester carbon dioxide. 23, inspire poets. 24, provide a spectacular symphony of color in the fall. 25, compel some of us to learn why leaves change color, hence our stumper. 26, when they are just buds in the early spring, provide proof that warmer weather is on the way. Isn't that nice? Okay, I can do this. 27, when leaves are still on the ground, 27, provide exercise to those raking them up. 28, tempt kids and some adults to jump in a pile of them. 29, provide work for city employees who clean them up from parks and streets. In the home, leaves can be used. Number 30, in art projects. Number 31, as decorations. Finally, on the international level, leaves inspired the Canadians to put one on their national flag. 33, give the olive branch its peace significance. In other words, if you were to offer your opponent an olive branch devoid of its leaves, what message would that be sending? Like? And 34, the name, as I mentioned, the name of the Toronto Maple Leafs hockey team. There we are.
So why isn't the Maple Leaves?
That's what I was mentioning earlier. I don't know.
That's funny, isn't it?
Okay. Jim, we're out of time.
Okay. Well,
thank
it's
you.
Been fun.
Indeed. We'll be back in whatever next month
See
is.
See you December.
December. Okay. Yeah. Asia, thank you. Appreciate it. This is Glenn Andreessen. I'll be back, what is it, 4 weeks probably. That's our story. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Beauty of the Earth. On Saturday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Trinity United Methodist Church in Portland. Beauty on Earth is the fall concert presented by the Portland Peace Choir. This is also the first performance with the new choir director, Jesse Cromer. There will also be a raffle, baked goods, and more. Again, that's Beauty of the Earth on Saturday, November 16th at 7 p.m. at the Trinity United Methodist Church, 3915 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer@kboo.org or call 503-